the sun rises in the east, we may have the good fortune to observe a very special phenomenon. For a moment, the orange-red light of the sun plays directly upon the cliff, and our shadows appear to be greenish-blue. These shadows are actually grey. Our eyes form the greenish-blue as a counter to the powerful orangish-red light. This simpler setup helps to show what really happens. We illuminate a cone, from the left at first with white light, then from the right with white light. There is now a grey shadow on each side of the cone. If we add a green filter to the left-hand lamp, the whole setup is bathed in green light, except for the part that is in the shade of the cone. This time, when we switch on the light on the right, which is still white, our vision creates a magenta shade where there is room for it, namely, in the grey shadow. If we zoom in until we can't see the surroundings anymore, but only the shadow itself, it stops looking magenta and turns grey again. If we view the shadow in isolation, it is grey. But when we see it in the context of which it is part, our vision invokes a magenta shade. Magenta is green's complementary color.
Okay, let's let's continue with what is called color constancy. As the name tries to explain, color constancy, meaning that a color remains constant, even though the illumination has changed. So basically, a yellow banana looks yellow on the candlelight or daylight, or even we could try to illuminate with bluish light. For us, still, we would describe then the banana as yellow, even though the spectral quality of the light has dramatically changed. So, schematically speaking, if we have these two scenes, we have a scene with yellow illumination. We have a bluish or cyan surface or an object, then we might think that, okay, yellowish light, bluish light, then the reflected light might be a kind of neutral. But still, we look at the object, and then our perception says, this is bluish, even though the light source is kind of yellowish, illuminating the bluish surface. Or if we just take the opposite, blue light and the kind of yellowish surface, then still we won't think that the surface is grayish. It has the appearance of yellow. So that is basically what I try to say with the banana, with the yellow banana. Or of course, we could have a grayish surface and still two type of illumination, and then still we would detect the surface as a kind of grayish, even though the illumination is not neutral white. And that is what color constancy is about. And that has been studied very comprehensive. There is at the Justus Liebig University in Gießen, Professor Karl Gegenfurter. And he has studied color constancy with conducting a lot of psychophysical experiments, also real experiments, asking people or observer to give name to different objects, even though they have been illuminated by different illuminations. So that is perhaps the original scene, and then here it is schematic demonstrated four different illumination, and then we get a kind of different radiations. So the reflectances, also the spectral properties of all these objects, remain the same. It is just the spectral quality which differs. So there are four different spectral power distributions of the lighting. But still, the observers are detecting that book as red, and kind of the sweater still has a kind of its own color constancy. So I added the link of his lecture, or where he is presenting the result of this color constancy experiment. So those who work with the coursework related to color appearance or appearance phenomena, so that would also give some additional insights about color constancy. Then this is a scene of the famous Rubik's cube. So the image on the left and right is generated to look like the same object, but illuminated only by different light. So yellowish illumination on the left hand side and the bluish illumination on the right. So if we focus on the red dots represented as if under yellow. Yellow and blue light both come from dots that are actually purplish or orange, and as shown here in the lower boxes. So these are actually the natural color, but still we would describe this as a kind of red or reddish, even though the illumination is highly yellowish and is highly bluish. But the color appearance remains the same, and this is what demonstrates color constancy. On the other hand, the blue dot on the left and the yellow dot on the right are both physically gray. And even though they appear bluish on the left and yellowish on the right. So what I try to say is that this area and this area is actually grayish. So you have the lecture notes. So if you open the lecture notes in, for instance, Photoshop, and then you have a pipette, then you can measure the pixel values, and then you will measure a gray pixel value there and an identical pixel value there. But visually, at least to me, here this appears rather bluish and this appears rather yellowish. Do you agree? And this is what is called color contrast. And of course, this is due to the illumination and also due to the adjacent other neighboring dots. A similar phenomenon, also known as the Adelson checker shadow, is that visual phenomenon published by Edward H. Adelson. So we can start with these two yellow dots. So basically, that is a graphic design of kind of a checkerboard, and then you have this object casting a shadow. And then we can discuss whether these two orange patches appears the same. And in my view, I would describe that patch as a kind of darker than that one. So that appears to me lighter than the top one. But then if I remove the background, then these two appears exactly the same. So the same would be then just with the two patches. So basically, Adelson claims that patch A and B are physically exactly the same. So measuring with a pipette the pixel values, I would have exactly the same pixel values there and there. But appearance-wise, and you might agree that there is a visual mismatch, whereas B appears brighter than A. And that is the true. So I can show you another video if I get this to work. Okay. Follow very. Pay attention to the video. Okay, these two patches are the exact same shade. Yes, any comments? Is that right or is that fake news or what is this? Any comments? Yeah?
Was the rest of the tiles like in the shadow also painted? Like, or was the shade just there for them and then you just moved it?
Hold on a second. Why, what is that? Where am I now? Okay. Now I can. Yeah, sure. Yeah, okay. What were you asking now? Whether?
I can understand that it's the same shade as the one outside. So it has to be like painted the same color as the outside. But what, like, because that one is the lighter one, but because of the shade, it has the same, like, color value as the dark checker.
Yeah.
That is not in the shade. When you bring it out, it shouldn't be dark anymore because it's no longer in the shade.
Yes, you're right. So this is just, it's rubbish.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes, but I think, you know, watching it the very first time, it's a kind of interesting. But then you might think, this is not right. And then, of course, if you pay really attention, then you see some image processing which is not done 100%. So, but I thought it's a kind of an interesting video to show. Yes, you had a comment?
Yeah, I didn't really, I couldn't make sense of it, because the tiles in the middle,
yeah,
if they were the same as the tiles in the original, like the gray square they would have been a lot darker.
Sure, that's exactly the point. So this is fake, you know. But if you do not pay attention and you do not think about what is happening, then you might think, this is possible to make up. So, and then in addition, some of the image processing, like. Yeah, kind of here, you know, you can, if you watch the video yourself, then you can see that there is some artifacts, so in coloring this tile, so then it's kind of obvious. Yes, let's go back. Okay, yes, that's the link. And then in the beginning, I was mentioning this social media phenomenon. whether the dress is blue, black, or white gold. So I won't go into the details here, but I would like to ask you to have a look at this 15-minute panel discussion, including the chap from Gießen, Karl Gegenfurter, who is part of the panel, trying to reflect over the phenomenon and give some insights what kind of phenomenon takes place in that. And a very important statement is on the basement, on the color is not the property of the object. So then the question is, what does that mean? Any comments, any reflections on that? Yes, please. Exactly. The light and? Yeah, exactly. So color is never the property of an object. It is a combination of the light and the sensation. Also, as you said, the type of light illuminating a scene or an object, and the interpretation, also the perception. Then, just to sum up, I'm aware of the fact that these two phenomena, also chromatic adaptation and color constancies, can be a kind of confusing. So therefore, I try to make a clear distinction with these two statements. So we learned that chromatic adaptation is describing the mechanism of the visual system to discount for the influence of the illuminant SPD. So chromatic adaptation is changing the sensitivity of the eye, whereas color consistency is achieved when the appearance of an object is determined only by its surface spectral reflectance. So as the term again indicates, color constancy means the naming of the color remains the same. So once again, a red tomato still remains red, whether it is illuminated by a bluish light source or a greenish light source or a white light source. And now you can imagine, if we human beings wouldn't have had this kind of ability of color constancy, then kind of the interpretation of the colors would constantly change dependent on the illumination. And that would be kind of very difficult. So thanks to color constancy, we can kind of describe a color independent of the spectral power distribution of the light source. Okay, now we move on with two other phenomena, simultaneous contrast. Perhaps this is familiar to you. So again, if we have these two kind of physical patches, if we would measure the color or the digital value of these two patches, then we would have the same number, obviously. But if we add a certain background behind this patch and another background to this patch, then appearance-wise, this patch appears a kind of lighter, and this patch appears a kind of darker to me. And this is in conjunction with the adjacent color or the background color. Another example are these bars, the black bars, and then on top of the black bars we have some gray bars, and then in between the black bars we have these other more darker bars, but the gray bars, they have exactly the identical physical value, but appearance-wise, the bars are determining the appearance of the gray bars. So we can do exactly the same with colors, and then that also results in the same light green. Then a lot of artists, they have used these type of visual phenomena of simultaneous contrast. So for instance, Josef Albers, a German-American designer, he used these two X, and having these two under the two different backgrounds, the two X's appear rather different. So simultaneous contrast is a visual phenomenon which causes the perception of a stimuli or color to be strongly influenced by adjacent and the background colors. So this can be a kind of a brightness contrast or a chromatic contrast or a combination. Another artist, Vincent van Gogh, in his paint The Night Café from 1888, also is using simultaneous contrast. So this is visible typically with the contrast colors of red and green. Can you find two identical elements in the image which has the same form and color? So there is an element in here which has the same color and the same shape. Probably difficult if you have a look at this shade, this color, and this one. Okay, yes?
Yeah, I was just about going to say the yellow and orange. What's
with the yellow? These two? Okay. I doubt. So, what about this one?
That's what I meant.
Ah, okay. Right. It's difficult to detect, you know, with all the noise. Okay. Another example is this Korn's wheat effect after the artist Tom Korn's wheat, who has published that in the 70 in the paper Visual Perception. So these two blocks have exactly the same spectral reflectance, but I claim that this area appears to me darker compared to this area here. And of course, if I use a kind of a gray bar, then it illustrates that physically it is exactly the same pixel value there and there. But appearance-wise, there is a contrast difference between the upper and the lower part. So then I was kind of curious to which degree the background is influencing just the object. So I removed the background. Then we got only these two objects, which again, that one appears a kind of light compared to this one. And again, it is basically exactly the same physical pixel value. Another example is the Kafka ring effect. So Kafka, 70 years back, was very active in the area of gestalt psychology. He was very fascinating of this effect. So again, we have this gray background, and then we have this lighter gray background. Then we have the circle. And to me, the circle now appears rather homogeneous visually. But what about if we take these two images apart? And suddenly, again, we have a typical simultaneous contrast. Another example is this. I'm always getting kind of confused. Ah, yeah. Here, the claim is that these kind of greenish elements and these cyan elements have exactly the same pixel value. And indeed, it is correct. So if you zoom in, then you might detect that the pixel value there in the cyan is exactly the same as in this green. And obviously, the green there is the same as the green there. So this, again, is a typical simultaneous contrast where different objects kind of influences certain colors. We move on with after images. So I would like to ask you to focus on the bird's eye. If you focus for half a minute on that black spot, you just stare on that black spot for some time. Just focus on the black spot a couple of more seconds. And then we put the green bird in his cage. And what is the color of the bird? Right. Kind of complementary color, contrast color. Yes. We can give another try. Another example is Mjøsa and Skibladner. So I used to make this kind of up. So this image has been taken in the 90s with photographical film. And then something weird did happen when we developed the film and made some paper copies. So there is a kind of a strange artifact where we have this bluish cast and the yellow cast. But with the aid of visual phenomenon, we can easily fix that. So let's give a try. So if you steer again to that black spot up there for a couple of seconds, again, you focus on the black spot for a couple of seconds. Just focus on that spot, focus on that spot, and then you move your sight to the white spot, and then probably the artifact is gone at least for a couple of seconds. And it has a kind of a homogeneous image for some time. Did that work?
Yeah.
Okay. Good. Another phenomenon, this is a kind of I wouldn't say boring image. It's my hometown, but it's a black and white image. So we can easily color that image with the aid of our vision. So again, stare at the black cross for a couple of seconds. Just stare at that cross for some time. Stare at that cross for some more time. Just focus on that cross. And then the black and white image becomes colored. And now it disappears again. And so perhaps initially it did look kind of like the real color image. So what is happening? Any ideas? Let's try to kind of do that more analytical. So if we focus on that red patch, so again we stare at the black dot for a couple of seconds. We stare on the black spot for a couple of seconds. Now, what kind of color appeared? What kind of color appeared where the red was? Where the red stimuli were? Yes, please?
Cyan.
Cyan, yes. Now, any ideas? Does the bell ring kind of what is happening? So very, very schematically speaking, I mean, we won't go into the depth, but schematically speaking, if our retina gets exposed to this image, then you can imagine that a certain area of the retina is exposed to this red stimuli. So therefore, we focus on a certain spot so that the retina, so the sensors, are exposed to that spot. And then the eye or the cones, they receive from that spot a lot of long wave information. That means the red cones are very, very active. And in the same area, the other two cones, also the green and the blue cone, are not active at all, schematically speaking. I mean, they can just stay there for half a minute or a minute, and they do not have to fire. But it is only the red cones which are active because they are exposed in that area with the red stimuli. And then basically, if we take away the stimuli, what is happening? The blue and the green cones, they fire immediately, whereas the red still, it takes a couple of seconds to kind of recalibrate. And this in these two or three, four, five seconds, then the green and the blue cones evoke a kind of additive color mixing, which is cyan or light blue, which is then again the contrast color of the red stimuli. Does that make sense? Okay, that's very kind of schematically explained, but this is what after image then is about. So you remember perhaps in the very first lecture I showed this kind of the dots moving in a circle. I don't remember either green dots or magenta dots, and then suddenly the contrast color appeared. So if the dots were green, then we got a kind of magenta dots appearing, or if it would have been magenta dots, then we would have suddenly seen green dots. And that is a kind of the same principle as I just explained in the previous slide. Okay, 2 weeks ago, we talked about human color vision. Initially, I was mentioning that we should discuss the two most known theory explaining the color vision. So the last two or the last two slides are now dedicated to the two phenomena or the two dominant theories explaining how color vision is functioning. So like most people, Thomas Young, who was an English physicist back 1750, assumed that there were three basic colors, namely the painter's yellow, ice blue, and purple. But then he noticed that the spectrum of sunlight was dominated by the shades of red, green, and blue-violet. And then he therefore thought that these represented the basic sensation of the visual system, and those the basic colors of the color circles. So then in 1802, he postulated the existing of the three types of photoreceptors. So it was actually Thomas Young who published a paper where he states that there are three types of photoreceptors, also known as cone cells in the eye, which each of which was sensitive to a particle range of the visible light. And then approximately 50 years later, Hermann von Helmholtz developed his theory further, saying that the three types of cone receptors could be classified as short preferring, also the blue area, the middle preferring, the green, and long preferring, the red, according to their response to the wavelengths of light striking. So the relative strengths of the signal detected by the three types of cones are then interpreted by the brain as a visible color. So Young, Helmholtz, they defined what is called the tri-receptor theory. Also three receptor, also the cone theory, consisting of LMS, or blue, green, and yellow, blue cones. So that was a kind of the explanation of the color vision. Later, Hering, who was a German physiologist, who did much research in color and spatial perception, he disagreed with the leading theory developed by Young and Helmholtz, who stated that the human eye perceived all colors in terms of three primary colors. So Hering looked more at the qualitative aspect of color, and he said there were six primary colors coupled in three pairs, namely red-green, blue-yellow, and the achromatic white-black. So his theory then was rehabilitated. In the 70s, when Edwin Land developed what is called the Retinex theory, that stated that whereas Helmholtz colors hold for the eye in the brain, the three colors are translated into six, or into the three pairs, green, red, yellow, blue, and black and white. By the way, the word retinex is formed from the word retina and cortex, also the retina where the photoreceptors are placed, and then for the signal interpretation that takes place in the visual cortex. So, by the way, Edwin Land, he was an American scientist and inventor, and he's best known as the co-founder of the Polaroid Corporation. I noticed that the Polaroid camera became again very popular, where you can take an image and then the physical paper copy gets developed from the way from the camera out, and then it takes about half a minute to develop the physical image. So I assume some of you are familiar with that old photo camera, which has become a kind of an interesting tool again. Then, 100 years back, another famous scientist, Erwin Schrödinger, he demonstrated that the first and the second model, also Young-Helmholtz and Hering's theory, are correct in terms of modeling the two theories mathematically, and then that these two models are kind of equivalent. And nowadays it is known that both theories explains our color vision. And just after image effect explains Hering's theory in a very simple way. So to conclude, to try... Chromatic theory, starting with the retinal receptors, red, green, and blue, which is also named as the Young-Helmholtz trichromatic theory. And then on the other hand, Hering's opponent process theory, where red, green, and blue signals gets translated into six components or three pairs, blue, yellow, red, green, and black, and white. And this plot shows the stages of the visual process that occur then in the retina. So we have the visible spectrum, also the light entering the retina. So we have the light-sensing photoreceptors, LMS, and the achromatic photoreceptors, the rods, and then we have the adaptation process which takes place, and then we have the translation from the three cone systems into the opponent system, red, green, yellow, blue, and the achromatic, which then transmits the signal to the visual cortex to which results in the color sensation. Okay. I think that was what I had to today. Helmholtz Kohlrausch effect. Yeah, that's the very last one. We still have a couple of minutes. Another interesting phenomenon, effect refers to the human eye phenomenon, that colored light appears brighter to us. Also, color light appears brighter than white light. And this is particularly relevant for the, among other things, for the entertainment industry, as it is most obvious when using color lights. So the point I would like to make, so all these colors, including the gray, have exactly the same lightness component. So once again, if you generate these patches, for instance, in Photoshop, using not RGB, you could use RGB, but it is straightforward to use, for instance, LAB or LHV, also lightness, hue, and chroma. Then you choose exactly the same lightness level. For instance, lightness equal 50. So all these patches, they have lightness level 50. But still, appearance-wise, at least to me, this magenta appears brighter than the gray. But physically, it has exactly the same lightness. So lightness is a typical physical description of the light level, whereas brightness is a physiological an appearance attribute. So in this Helmut Kohlrausch, just to sum up, colored light appears lighter than white light, and that can be proved. So if you would convert these patches into gray, then all these patches would have the same lightness value. Okay. Polarized light, cellophane tab. Yeah, perhaps that we can have a look in the lab, where we can demonstrate with two polarizing filters and cellophane. You know, cellophane is kind of the material wrapping in flowers. That is kind of plastic material, cellophane. So with two gray polarization filters and cellophane, we can create color shades. So that we can demonstrate in the lab kind of very easily. Okay, then that brings me to the end of today's talk. Some references in addition to the one which are mentioned in Blackboard. Okay, so next week again we meet on Wednesday, and then the topic is color vision deficiency, or reduced color vision, which is a kind of important for you as a designer to have an understanding how a certain population is not able to detect all color shades, and then what are the workaround, or what are alternative solutions to have a kind of a universal design which could be used for entire population. Okay, have a nice week. See you.